Good morning and welcome to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Alcorn Auto Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes. And the program is being paid for by Davidson Advertising and Alan Shoes. This is show number 42, and today is Saturday, February 20th, 2021.
And hello, my name is Alan McCloskey. My wife, Annette, and I own and operate Alan Shoes in Tucson. As host of this show, Rob and I are committed to serving you, our listening audience, with ideas, strategies, and techniques for building, marketing, or improving your business. We created the show to try to help the efforts of small business owners to recover from the impact of the pandemic. Through all of our shows, we've been discussing the latest news. On most shows, we interviewed leaders in our community that have shared with you their experience, their knowledge, and some have shared their stories of struggles and success. You know, Rob, I'm so excited to share with you the news of what's going on with my PPP loan, and we're going to get to that later. But who's our guest today?
Well, Alan, we're really thrilled today. Our guest is Samuel Richard from the Arizona Dispensaries Association. We're going to be talking about this brand new industry that's starting up in Arizona now. I mean, this is something that's absolutely mind-boggling that they're starting. So I think it's fantastic, and we're looking forward to having Sam on with us.
You know, Rob, I'm excited he is here. As you know, I'm a little involved with a plan for a hemp growing operation in the Tucson area. And we've discussed whether marijuana is in the future for that project. And speaking of something that can make you high, Rob, I want to share an update on my quest for a PPP loan.
Alan, that's got to be one of the worst segues in the history of radio broadcasting.
Well, of course it is. However, yeah. I want to give you an update on my loan because I'm really excited. Again, I'm really high about it. I got my approval for my PPP second loan, and I've already signed the note. I'm just waiting it to be funded, hopefully be funded Monday. It's been a long wait, and, you know, all my friends were getting it, like, within a few days, and I just had one issue after another, but finally, the bank came through and worked it out, and I'm just going to tell you that when someone makes something right and helps you, you know, it's hard to hold anything against them, and it's a discussion that we should have because every one of us is going to have problems. We're going to have things we run out of in our stores, you know, because of the problem with getting products into our stores with freights and everything going on. But if you eventually make something right or make something good or repair a relationship with a customer, then you make magic happen. And that's what you need to do in today's world of all these things going wrong. If you have an issue with an employee, if you make it right, eventually your issue, your concern, your arguments go away. And that's what I want to encourage some of our listeners to be thinking about. And just like the bank made it right with me. And what do you think about that, Rob?
Well, I think it's great, Alan, because one of my old bosses used to say, you know, when business is great, everyone's fantastic and everyone's happy, but it's how you deal with problems and resolve those problems that shows what kind of a business or operation you have. And I agree with you 100%. It's great when people do what they say they're going to do and stand up for you and fight for you. We talked about that with the original PPP loans with the bank that helped me out, particularly because my gigantic bank didn't want to have anything to do with me. And you remember these things. And now I've been banking with them for months and plan on doing it for years because they helped me when I needed help. It's just that simple.
That makes sense. And, you know, we're going to pivot a little bit to where government can also work with business people and help them make some magic happen. And you have an article about something happening. Maybe not government, but a small businesses in Michigan. What do you have on that?
Well, nearly 6,000 small businesses in Michigan impacted by the 3-month pandemic pause on indoor dining and other operational limits are sharing in $52.5 million grant funds from the state. The grants from the Michigan Economic Development Corp's Michigan Small Business Survival Grant will go to 5,960 businesses and help maintain nearly 53,000 jobs. The figures show that on average, a business received just more than $8,800. The review said 34,000 applications for the funds were taken over a three-day application program. And Alan, there's something interesting I found this morning in the Arizona Daily Star. A new initiative, Forge Ahead, will support Arizona's small businesses with training from leading experts in key COVID-19 recovery efforts. The online personalized training launched by the Arizona Small Business Association is going to be there to help out small businesses in Arizona. If you want some information about that, feel free to call me in my office Monday or email me. Be happy to send it to you or go online to the Arizona Daily Star. It's in the business section this morning. These guys are offering help, and any help can be used nowadays. Everybody needs some help, and there's a lot of people out there offering it. So I encourage you to take a look at that article if you can.
You know, Rob, I want you to first send it to me, because I have been trying to scratch every article that I could find for some help. We were lucky enough, my business, to get some help, you know, through some of these grants. And, you know, Arizona is not having an extensive thing like Michigan, but, you know, anything helps. A certain segment of all businesses nationwide are being hurt disproportionate to everybody else here, Rob. And you had an article about some black small business owners being left behind.
Yeah, Alan, black small business owners are being left behind in the pandemic. That's according to a survey. This was in CNBC. A woman in Orange, New Jersey, her gymnastics studio, Athletic Arts Academy, didn't reopen until July, and then it was only at 25% capacity. The word pivot became synonymous with survival, said Ms. Arcade, who started her business in 2014 in the hopes of bringing gymnastics to kids in her urban area. That meant conducting virtual classes, and once she did reopen, adding skateboarding and roller skating to her offerings. She's still at 25% capacity since many families are staying home, may be afraid to come in or live in multi-generational households, which means they have to be careful putting older relatives in harm's way. Whether she can survive another year under these conditions depends on many variables, such as the flexibility of her landlord. About one-third, or 37% of black small business owners, said they can survive more than a year under current conditions, versus 59% of white small business owners and 55% of Hispanic small business owners, according to the latest quarterly CNBC SurveyMonkey small business survey. Additionally, 15% said their business has been temporarily shuttered due to the pandemic and has not yet reopened. In comparison, 8% of white small non-business owners reported the same. The survey was conducted January 25th through 31st using the SurveyMonkey platform. So a lot of businesses are being impacted, and many, many are being impacted greatly.
And also, some individuals are being impacted. Here's an article you sent me, Rob, I'm going to read. 1 of 10 in U.S. may have to switch occupations post-pandemic. 1 out of every 10 U.S. workers, about 17 million all told, will likely be forced to leave their jobs and take up new occupations by 2030 as COVID-19's after effects destroy huge swaths of low-paying positions in a labor market that was primed for disruption before the pandemic. Women, minorities, and the young, and the less educated as well, will probably be the hardest hit by what consultant firm McKinsey & Co. foresees in a new report as an unprecedented hollowing out of low-wage work in retail, hospitality, and other industries. COVID is a big disruptor. Susan Lund, a Washington-based partner of McKinsey Global Institute, the consultant research arm, said in an interview. And I think that this goes hand in hand, Rob, with the changes that are going to happen as a result of the minimum wage increases. Whether it happens or not is still up in the air. Nationwide, Arizona is far ahead of a lot of states, behind some other states. But in the Midwest, there's a lot of people. I don't know if it's the Midwest as much as some other areas, but there's a lot of areas that are still at the $7.25 minimum wage, and they need to be increased. And there's a fight to get us to $15 an hour, as you've read, Rob. And I think that Bernie Sanders had a great deal to say on that recently, did he not?
Yeah. You know, we'll just see what happens, Alan. They're going to do everything they can, but the main thing is they've got to get this stimulus program through. I think it'll do a lot for everybody and get us back on track. It seems like the Biden administration is going to push this thing through by March, and hopefully it'll do what it needs to do. So we've got to be encouraged and stay positive and move forward. How's that sound?
You know, we have one more quick story before we take our break. Rob, you had something about U.S. life expectancy.
Do we really want to talk about that, Alan, today?
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of a downer, but it basically they're saying the U.S. life expectancy has dropped a year since the pandemic began. So
right.
You're likely to live. The average American is living a shorter life as a result of that change. It just seems like a sharp drop in a short period of time. So we're a little worried about that, and we just had to make mention of it. But we're going to take a break. You're listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen. It's on KVOI, 10:30 a.m., The Voice. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising, 629-9555. Please come back after our commercial break.
Welcome back to Back to Business with Rob and Allen. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Alcorn Auto Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Allen Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, owner of Allen Shoes.
And our special guest today is Samuel Richard. He's director of the Arizona Dispensaries Association. Sam has a degree in nonprofit leadership and management from Arizona State's College of Public Service and Community Solutions. He's a fellow of the Flynn Brown Civic Leadership Academy and holds certificates from both Valley Leadership and the Center for Progressive Leadership. Sam was recently recognized by the Arizona Capital Times and its inaugural Breakouts Award, highlighting the sharpest political minds in the state, and has previously been recognized in the Phoenix New Times Best of Phoenix as Best Lobbyist, and by the Phoenix Business Journal as a member of the 2013 class of 40 under 40. Sam and his wife Kim make their home in Central Phoenix with their two children, Harlow and Holden, along with 8 hens, 5 desert tortoises, and 2 cats that would rather not be bothered. Sam, welcome to Back to Business.
Hey, it's great to be here, and it's always humbling and a bit awkward to hear, you know, that bio read back, but it's wonderful to be with you all.
Well, it's an impressive bio, and Sam, first thing I want to do is I want to congratulate you and your group and all the groups that were involved in getting Proposition 207 passed. If you had told me 20 years ago that recreational marijuana would be legal in Arizona, I would have told you, no way. So what you guys did was absolutely phenomenal. How'd you get it done?
Well, thank you. And I think, you know, you pointed back, you know, to 20 years ago. I think that's really where this journey started, right? In 1996, the first effort to bring a medical program to Arizona was put in front of voters, and the voters said no at that. They said yes at that stage, but then the legislature completely gutted that initiative, and that really started the 25-year journey that really culminated last month, January 22nd, when the first sales for our adult use program came to fruition. So in many ways, I think you're absolutely right. That 20 years ago, I think a lot of people would be surprised that we're here now, but as is most often the case, huge victories and large celebrations like the one that we're experiencing now have their roots in history. And 1996 was really the start of the legalization effort here in Arizona.
And the fact that it was 60% of the voters voted for this is just unbelievable. I mean, 2/3 majority is pretty overwhelming in any election. So
absolutely. And that equates to, just for your listeners to know, that's 2 million Arizonans that voted yes. And that's more individuals that have voted for or against anything on any ballot in Arizona, candidate or issue. So more people have voted yes on cannabis than any candidate or other issue in the history of Arizona. So we're pretty proud of that fact.
That's fantastic. So my next question is, how do you start a brand new industry from scratch?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the other big thing that is an important thing to point out here. You know, cannabis has been around since 8,000 BCE. You know, that there have been some, you know, cultural digs that have found residue of hemp and cannabis plants as a part of religious ceremonies and, you know, just, you know, recreational use far, far back into history. What is new is bringing it into a regulated industry, right? Obviously, cannabis has had a kind of an in and out relationship with the law. And there's huge cross sections of of policy that need to be talked about in terms of racial and socioeconomic injustices related to the war on drugs and things like that. But I think not to be the guy that you know goes after the frame of the question, but just for argument's sake here, I will point out that cannabis isn't new. The industry of cannabis isn't new. What's new is bringing it into a place that's going to benefit the tax coffers in the state, right? So we had a handful of economists support our effort in developing the work for Prop 207. We expect upwards of $300 to $350 million a year will go to essential programs across the state, whether that's our community college systems that the state legislature has continued to underfund, roads and infrastructure across greater Arizona, or important in mental health programs that desperately need investment.
So now the difference with the medical cannabis and the recreational, is it strictly just the tax rate?
That's the biggest thing. Yes. Yeah, so right now, all medical purchases are subject to a standard retail transaction privilege tax, or you know what folks might know as sales tax, right? And then all recreational purchases have that. And then in addition to it, a 16% excise tax, which is the same level of taxation that alcohol and tobacco use as well, right? So that's kind of that base there. The only other difference is that on the medical market, many of our qualified patients require significantly higher dosages when it comes to edibles and other concentrated forms of the plant. So there are no restrictions on the medical program in terms of dosage. On the adult use side, edibles are limited to 100 milligrams per package and 10 milligrams per serving. But other than that, there are really only some operational differences in how folks are checked in at the door, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the same plant. It's just a different method of purchasing.
Now, with the medical patients, it's very easy for the dispensaries to verify who they're dealing with because they have to have the Arizona State medical card. Now, with the recreational, your members are going to be more like the alcohol serving businesses, are they not, where they're going to have to rely on regular ID?
That's absolutely correct. And in fact, the rules and the statutes actually cite the identification rules and guidelines for liquor establishments. So a state-issued ID, a government-issued ID that proves that you're 21 and over is all that's necessary to walk in the door in any one of the 109 facilities that have gone to adult use in Arizona. Now, I know that most of your folks that listen to the program are in Tucson and southern Arizona, that there are about at last check, somewhere in the neighborhood of about a dozen locations in Tucson and southern Arizona that have quote unquote flipped that switch. So there's that. And also, just to go back, that was the other reason why I was nervous listening back to that bio at the top, because it's all filled with a whole bunch of ASU and Phoenix stuff. So I do want folks to know that I started my collegiate career at the U of A and love every opportunity I have to spend time in Tucson.
Well, we'll forgive you for being an ASU okay. grad. That's okay. You know,
thank you.
You have to overlook certain flaws in people, right, Alan?
Yes, I was thinking the same thing. I was trying to find a nice way to say that, you know, don't think you're going to get on our good side just because you started at the U of A. It's where you finished.
I wanted to finish. I like to say that I was on the other dean's list. I was invited not to return back to the U of A.
Oh, I got it. So listen, I wanted to ask you a little bit. I want you to explain to our listeners the difference between hemp and marijuana, because I think that people confuse that, and there's a big hemp growing industry that actually was legalized before marijuana. What do you know about hemp that you can explain to our the differences you can explain to our listener?
Yeah, it's quite nuanced, but I think at the root of it, it's important to know that it's the same plant, and that hemp has been used for a very, very long time. In fact, prior to things like Pima cotton, it was one of the leading fibers used in textile manufacturing, and I think for a time, I'm not sure if they still do, but even Mercedes-Benz uses hemp in the production of their vehicles. So it's a very widely used and fast-growing plant that doesn't, you know, take up a ton of resources. So it was very popular. And in fact, it's something that Thomas Jefferson grew himself. And it is something that you can also smoke. That in some of his letters to his colleagues and in his own journals, he noted that one of his favorite things to do was sit on his back porch and smoke his hemp and look over that. So usually, functionally, it is the same plant, but in the expression of kind of the potency, some of the things that create that psychoactivity, it's much less prevalent in a hemp cultivar or strain than it would be in that, you know, more THC dominant or you know, marijuana dominant plant. So that's really the distinction in federal law, and the hemp program is now governed under the Farm Bill and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So there still is small levels of psychoactivity, but right now it's 0.3%. That you can have that be psychoactivity and still be considered hemp. Anything above that is considered, you know, a quote unquote hot plant or marijuana. There are some efforts to actually increase that from a third of a percent all the way up to a full percent, just because of the variability of different cultivars and whatnot. But you know, it is a very ubiquitous plant. And it can be used in all manners of effect, and we're still really learning about its full use and potential because of some of the legal hoops that a lot of folks have had to jump through to really kind of learn about the plant. You can't get federal dollars to research a plant that has been deemed federally illegal. So some of those just barriers have been things that the industry has been very creative in working through and persevered through a lot of those roadblocks.
Sam, I want you to hold on because after our news and our break, we want to bring you back. I want to follow up on this discussion, but we're going to take a break now. You're listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. The Voice. In the next segment, we'll have Sam back, and we'll have a discussion with him, and we'll be right back after our news.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Allen. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Alcorn Auto Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Allen Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey. My wife Annette and I own and operate Allen Shoes in Tucson. We continue with our guests from the Arizona Dispensaries Association, and we were talking about hemp a little bit, and you had mentioned, Sam, that when hemp gets too hot, it's subject to this limit, and correct me if I'm wrong, that means that the hemp grower, if he only has a hemp growing license, that he has to destroy his crop if it's over that 0.3% THC level. Is that correct?
It is correct, yeah, and I think that's one of the big reasons why some of the hemp producers are really pushing for that 1% variability. I think that most folks really shoot for that, you know, less than a third of a percent, less than half of a percent. But to have that wiggle room up to 1%, I think is helpful. And just to put that in context, you know, over that third of a percent threshold, you have to destroy it because it's that, you know, quote unquote hot. But really, the average cannabis consumer that's, you know, walking through the door of one of the dispensaries across the state is looking for something probably closer to 15 to 20% of that total cannabinoid content. So it isn't enough to be enticing to, you know, a typical cannabis consumer, but it isn't but it's too much to be sold as hemp, right? So it's this weird middle ground, and I think that's why folks are trying to push for that increase to 1%.
Now, Sam, there's so many moving parts to this industry of yours. Now, someone goes into one of the dispensaries today to buy some product. That's great. But where's the product coming from? Who's growing it? Who's manufacturing it? How's that work?
Yeah, so one of the things that is related to the licensing from the Department of Health here is that you have to be an Arizona producer, right? So because of the federal illegality of cannabis, You can't move anything across state lines. Otherwise, that invites, you know, federal authorities to start to get involved. So the only folks that are authorized to cultivate cannabis in Arizona are those that either own a license or work directly with a license owner to manage their off-site cultivation operations. So we have about 130 licensed operators here in the state of Arizona currently. So we have up to the potential of somewhere in that neighborhood of 130 plus or minus cultivation operations that could be off-site. And there are quite a few in both southeastern, southern, and southwestern Arizona. Is a great kind of offer some great growing conditions for cannabis. So there's quite a bit of action happening south of the Gila.
And as far as testing and that sort of thing goes, these products have to be tested. There's certain limits that they have to have. I mean, why don't you explain that so our listeners get an idea of that they're just not getting some kind of junk.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the two, just the main tenets of our push towards a legal system is that regulation, right? When something operates in the shadows or operates exclusively on the illicit market, you can't mandate testing. You can't mandate some of these regulations. So it's a real benefit to patients and adult use consumers to make their purchases with a licensed retailer, because you can have confidence that that product you're getting off the shelf goes through a strict testing regime. In Arizona, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 60 different analytes that are tested for every product that goes onto that shelf and then comes off of that shelf and into a patient's or an adult use consumer's shopping bag. And they range from pesticides to heavy metals to microbials, all the way down to, like, you know, residual solvents, because some of the newer products are not just that, you know, dried flour, but maybe it's processed flour down to, you know, a topical cream that you know you can use just like a lotion, but it has some psychoactivity and other healing benefits to it, or even something as unique as a chapstick, or, like, you know, kind of a version of those Listerine breath strips that you can place on your tongue. There's cannabis versions of almost any product that you can imagine.
That's just fantastic. It's really amazing. And now you've got you've still got the federal prohibition, and how's that affecting you guys still as far as banking goes and those kinds of things?
Yeah, so I think, you know, those are the most frustrating pieces, I think, to operate currently in the space. So something that the members of our association know, and we work every day to make sure that policymakers down at the Capitol and across city halls in the state understand, is that cannabis businesses are businesses. But the difference is that we don't have access to the capital markets, and we don't have access to the debt markets like nearly anybody else, because banking institutions are really just walled off from working with the cannabis space in more ways than not. So in Arizona, there's a very small number of banking institutions that are able to work with us because they're chartered to only work in the state of Arizona, right? But there is some federal legislation, which is known as the Safe Banking Act, that is working its way through the process. And that is would open up the doors to both the capital markets and the debt markets for our operators. And we're heavily taxed as well. Many of our members have an effective tax rate in excess of 60 to 70%, because a lot of the opportunities that folks have to do, deductions and whatnot just aren't available to cannabis businesses.
And I know in my business, in the advertising business, a lot of your dispensaries have been kept from advertising on radio and television for similar reasons, correct?
Absolutely, yes. So some possibilities are available for, you know, the billboards or roadside advertising, but absolutely nothing over the air, either TV or radio, very, very similar to tobacco in that way.
It's going to be something that, maybe you guys need to forge an alliance with, like, the Arizona Broadcasters Association and show them how much money that they might be missing out on. Because right now, during the pandemic, they're getting hit pretty hard. And I would say there's probably many, many millions of dollars that you guys would be willing to spend with them if you were allowed to.
That's absolutely the case. So I would invite anybody from the Broadcasters Association or any of your listeners to check us out. We're at azdispensaries.org. And for anybody listening as well, we're on Instagram at arizona.dispensaries. And we also have a page up on LinkedIn as well, because like I mentioned earlier, cannabis businesses are businesses. We're one of the last frontier industries in America. So we're hiring like gangbusters. More than 20,000 individuals currently work in the cannabis space here in Arizona. And that represents more than 5,000 new jobs just in 2020 alone. So we are definitely on an upward trajectory, and we invite everyone and anyone to get in touch with us, azdispensaries.org.
You're also getting a lot of national players coming into Arizona now, taking over some of the local dispensaries. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a piece of this, right? Like with any new industry, right? Everyone gets to market with their new and fresh ideas, and then there's that kind of natural cycle of consolidation. So we're seeing that happen a little bit now. But I will say that Arizona, in many industries, but you know, we're talking here obviously about the cannabis industry. We have some national players that actually have their headquarters here. So one of the largest suppliers of the batteries for vaporized cannabis, called Jupiter, their corporate headquarters are here in Arizona. Harvest Health and Recreation, one of the largest cannabis companies in the country, has their headquarters here in Arizona, and they have a very successful location in Tucson as well. So your folks can check them out there. But absolutely, we're in this period of consolidation and kind of regrouping as folks go into this new adult use. You know, federal legalization is probably, you know, on a 3 to 5 year horizon. And once that happens, I think that you're going to get people outside the industry to start peeking in, whether it's, you know, tobacco companies or big agribusiness. But even, you know, maybe players like, you know, the convenience stores might get into that, right? They are very, well in tune with, high count transactions where speed is of the essence. So I think you're going to see a lot of folks who are not directly connected to the cannabis industry have quite a bit of interest in what we're up to in the coming years.
Well, didn't Constellation Brands take a pretty big piece of canopy a few years ago?
They absolutely did, yeah. And that, I think, is a nod to something that hasn't yet quite materialized in the Arizona market. But we're seeing it happen in other markets where beverages are really becoming the new thing in cannabis. And as I mentioned, you know, smoking dried flower is far from the only way that you can interact with cannabis. Seltzer type beverages that are infused with THC and CBD and other cannabinoids are absolutely coming to market, and there's some big players. So not just Constellation, but I actually have the pleasure of working with a national group that has a beverage council, and the two co-chairs of that beverage council are Adolphus Bush IV and Scott Coors. So I'll let you carry forward those surnames and make some assumptions about who cares about this burgeoning industry.
Exactly. Alan, any final questions for Sam?
I don't, Sam. We're going to want to invite you back in the future, I'm sure. You have plenty of information, and this is a big topic for us. Thank you very much for joining us, Sam.
It was a pleasure to be with you, too. Thank you so much, and I'll come back anytime you make the call.
Great. Thanks, Sam. You take care and be well.
All right, you too. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b2btucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Rob and Alan on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Please come back after our commercial break.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, owner and operator with my wife Annette of Alan Shoes. At this part of our show, we have been starting the last few weeks, Rob, with some good news stories, and we've got three of them here. And the first one here that I have as a good news story is something about the Perseverance rover that successfully landed on Mars and sent back its first images. And we just thought we'd make mention of that, Rob. And I think that pretty much speaks for itself. And that's a pretty good technological. Oh, it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, you know, to see how that, I mean, gosh, the fact that how many millions of miles away that thing is, and they do this all remotely, and it's almost mind-boggling that this can happen, Alan. I think we should be so proud of the technology and what our NASA has accomplished. And a lot of the folks at the U of A have been a part of these things. So this stuff is really, really neat. It's right out of Star Trek.
Here's good news article two. You sent me this, Rob, and since you're a big dog lover, I thought you would read the story about what most dog owners would do.
Oh, you're talking about the one? Oh, my goodness. You know, I was talking with Reed about this the other day because, as you can imagine, Alan, our dogs rule our life. And this one says, true best friends. I've got it right here. True best friends. Most dog owners say they'd risk their lives to save their pet. From snake attacks to jumping into oncoming traffic, a new study finds 1 in 3 dog owners have put themselves in harm's way to save their four-legged friend. Some Americans have pulled off daring rescues from towering construction sites or dove into pools all to save their dogs. One respondent says they got in between their hound and another angry dog, and another even took an electric shock from an exposed wire before the pup got too close. In advance of National Love Your Pet Day on February 20th, which is today, a survey of 2,000 American dog owners examined all the ways respondents show their love for their pooch. More than 7 in 10 people said they would gladly put themselves in harm's way to save their dog. It's no surprise that respondents leaped into action when their pup was in danger, since nearly 4 in 5 consider them a full-fledged member of the family.
I can see what's going on with dogs with you, because we have had a dog for the last few years, and she rules our life. So, you know, we would be very unhappy and would certainly try to do our best if she was in harm's way. And I also read a story about someone saving the life of their cow the other day. I mean, it's just it's not just dogs. It's pets of all kind. We become very attached to them, and they are part of our family.
Well, you know, the thing about them is they give you unconditional love, Alan, no matter what. You know, I've seen homeless people out there with their dogs, and the dogs love them to death as long as they take care of them and love them. It's they're just a part of our life.
Our other good news story here, it has to do with Dolly Parton. And I put it under the good news part because she did something that, you know, I think we can all be proud of. It had to do with she was offered, Rob, you have that article?
I do, Alan. Humbly turning down major honor seems to be 9-to-5 job for Dolly Parton. The beloved country singer on Thursday said she has asked Tennessee's legislature to remove a bill to erect a statue of her on the state's Capitol grounds from consideration, despite being honored and humbled by the effort. Given all that's going on in the world, I don't think putting me on a pedestal is the appropriate thing. This comes weeks after Parton revealed she turned down the Presidential Medal of Freedom from former President Donald Trump not once but twice, first because her husband was sick and second because she couldn't travel to Washington. She added that she isn't sure she'd accept the honor if it was offered a third time, saying she'd be doing politics and that I'm not sure that I even deserve it, an assertion that her fans would surely have a bone to pick. Parton did express openness to such a statue being erected at Tennessee's Capitol at a later date, writing, I hope, though, that somewhere down the road several years from now, or perhaps after I'm gone, if you still feel I deserve it, then I'm certain I will stand proud in our great state capitol as a grateful Tennessean. And, you know, Alan, she donated $1 million of her own money to help fund the virus vaccine production. So
program.
She's quite a person, really quite a person.
So we're going to move on to our segment called What Were They Thinking? And we have three great stories for you today. And the first one involves someone that wanted to make a tribute to Rush Limbaugh, who recently died, and they missed something.
They missed something here, Alan. They sure did.
Go right ahead.
Sure. Cigar Aficionado magazine paid tribute to right-wing radio host Rush Limbaugh, who died this past week at the age of 70, but it left out a key detail about the longtime smoker. The tweet called Limbaugh a giant among smokers, and the story spoke of his love of attending cigar events as well as his relationship with editor-in-chief Marvin Shanken, who recalled dinners in a smoke-filled room and their time together on the golf course. "I can't count the number of cigars we smoked together, just the two of us," said Shanken. The magazine made no mention of Limbaugh's cause of death, lung cancer, a disease often caused by smoking, including cigar smoking. Twitter blew up over it, Alan. One Twitter person said, "This is arguably the most effective anti-smoking ad I've ever seen."
What was he thinking? We're going to go on. The next one had to do with some hotel guests in South Korea.
A newlywed South Korean couple say they're undergoing counseling after being told that the windows in their luxurious spa of their five-star resort hotel were of one-way glass, only to discover on the final day of their stay that they had been walking around naked in full view of other guests. The husband posted a complaint online about the Grand Yeosun Jeju Hotel on the island of Jeju off the southern tip of the Korean Peninsula. He claimed that his wife had used the sauna on several occasions during their stay and had not bothered to use a towel to cover up because they were told that there was a blocking on the window. There are a number of other guests using the facilities, including minors. The guests who have not been named added that the windows on the showers and toilet facilities were also not protected by one-way glass. "My wife and I are currently undergoing psychotherapy as we were so shocked after realizing that we had taken a shower and used toilets that were visible from the outside," the man said. So quite a trip for that group.
Yeah, what was that hotel thinking? Anyhow, we have the third story here, and all we need to do, but you're going to do a little bit more, Rob. All we need to do is just say this person's name, and people will say, "What was that guy thinking?" And the name is Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz, yep. Ted did it again this week when all his constituents in Texas were freezing to death. No water, no power. Him and his wife and kids, they took a little trip to Cancun. And it's pretty bad politics on his part, Alan. It's... He came back the next day and made all kinds of excuses, but the fact of the matter is it looked pretty bad. And you know something else that was kind of interesting about the whole story? I read another little article about it, is they left their dog home all by himself.
That's not cool. So I don't know. How much time do you have left, Rob, in our show?
We got about a minute and a half, Alan, so we're in pretty good shape. So. But, yeah.
Well, you know, if we were awarding the Putts of the Week awards, which we're not, which is what we were doing, Ted would win hands down this week, I think. But that story has had so many legs to it. It's a little bit much, but it just cannot stop. And he'll be living this down for a while, or trying to live it down.
Absolutely. You know, and we just hope that all the folks in Texas and in the South, this weather has been unbelievable this last week. In fact, you know, Alan, I had a little auto accident about a week and a half ago, and I was talking to the adjuster yesterday, and she said this was one of the worst weeks they've ever had because of all the accidents and all of the problems involved with the weather. I mean, she said it was just unbelievable, and a lot of folks were injured, and there was just a lot of problems. So we sure hope that the weather clears up. We're going to have a fantastic day today. We're looking forward to like 80 degrees, but... this is the place to be, Alan, Arizona. We'll take the heat anytime, won't we?
I think you should let that insurance adjuster off the hook and just let her write you a big fat check so she can pay attention to Texas.
Okay, I will tell her that. Thank you.
Catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b-t-o-b-tucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising. This has been Back to Business with Rob and Alan on KBOI 10:30 a.m. The Voice.
Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening.